slowly rotting around back. The rear windshield caved in, back tires flat to the rim. Surely no one lived here. But the number on the mailbox matched the one on the paper Wade had given her. She pulled into the drive and got out, picking her way along a weedy track meant to pass for a path to the porch. Skirting a cluster of mismatched pots filled with pink and white geraniums, the only signs of life in an otherwise abysmal landscape, she mounted a set of creaky steps, took a deep breath, and knocked before she could change her mind. It was some time before the door opened, but finally, a wizened face with eyes the color of old chambray appeared through a narrow opening. "Yes?" The voice was creaky with age and unmistakably wary. "Are you Loretta Rawlings?"
"Who wants to know?"
"My name is Christine Ludlow, Mrs. Rawlings." The name felt strange on her tongue, foreign after so many months as Christy Lynn Parker. "My husband was Stephen Ludlow. Does that name mean anything to you?" The door eased open another few inches. The old woman stood looking her over, heavily stooped at the waist and shoulders.
"You've come, then," she said hoarsely. "I wondered if you would."
"I'm not here to cause trouble, Mrs. Rawlings. I just... there are questions about your granddaughter and my husband. I was hoping we could talk." The old woman glanced back over her shoulder, as if she might have something on the stove. Christy Lynn tried to peer inside, but could make out nothing beyond an old plaid couch and a floor lamp with a yellowed shade.
"Give me a minute, and I'll be out."
She closed the door then, leaving Christy Lynn standing on the porch. Moments later, she returned with two glasses of lemonade. She wore a scruffy wool sweater, despite the afternoon heat.
"There," she said, nodding toward a pair of plastic chairs. "We'll sit there."
She handed Christy Lynn a glass that was already beginning to sweat, then fumbled in the pocket of her house dress, eventually producing a soft pack of basic menthols and a disposable lighter. She eased stiffly into one of the chairs, waiting until Christy Lynn had taken the other to withdraw a cigarette from the pack and clamp it between her lips. Her hands, blue-veined and skeletal, trembled as she lit it.
"Hope you don't mind. I don't smoke in the house anymore."
"No, not at all." Christy Lynn studied the woman as she took that first long pull, her leathery cheeks caving in as she dragged in a lungful of smoke, and then exhaled it with a faint rattle. It was impossible to guess her age. She was skin and bone, all joints and sinew, her skin the texture of old parchment. Somewhere in her 80s was probably a safe bet, though she could have been younger. Something told her life had been less than kind to Loretta Rawlings. For a time, Christy Lynn said nothing, balancing her untouched lemonade glass on her knee and wondering where to begin. In the end, it was Mrs. Rawlings who broke the silence.
"I ask what you came to ask," she said, in her flat, phlegmy voice. "I'll do my best to answer."
"I know how uncomfortable this must be for you, Mrs. Rawlings. It's uncomfortable for me, too. But there are things I feel I have a right to know, like the precise nature of your granddaughter's relationship with my husband." Loretta Rawlings turned her head, her hazy eyes unsettlingly steady.
"You don't need to mince words, Mrs. Ludlow. I've been around a long time. Not much shocks me."
Christy Lynn nodded, wishing she could say the same. "All right, then. Was your granddaughter having an affair with my husband?" Loretta took another long pull on her cigarette as she mulled the question.
"I'd stopped thinking of it that way, but I suppose that's what it was. No way around it, really, since it was you wearing the wedding ring and not my honey."
The blunt answer left Christy Lynn scrambling for a response. She had expected something else, a defense of her granddaughter's behavior, excuses, justification. Instead, she had answered the question head on.
"Can you tell me how long they knew each other?"
She seemed to give the question some thought, tracing a shaky finger around the rim of her glass.
I suppose it must be almost 4 years now. It was right after the book about the plane crash. Honey loved that book. When she heard they were making it into a movie, she convinced herself that if she could just meet the author, she could talk him into giving her the part of Sandra. He used to walk around practicing her lines like she was moving to Hollywood any day.
Your granddaughter was an actress?
Loretta smiled sadly. My granddaughter was a dreamer, Mrs. Ludlow, and determined to get out of this town.
She turned her face away, her voice suddenly thick.
She got half her wish.
Christy Lynn squirmed as the moment stretched, sad, and more than a little awkward. I'm sorry you lost your granddaughter, Mrs. Rawlings.
No one calls me Mrs. Rawlings. Call me Retta, and thank you for that. It's big of you to say after everything. How did you find out?
I was asked to identify your granddaughter's body at the morgue. Retta's head snapped around, eyes flashing.
Bastards, she growled,
flicking her cigarette off the front porch and into the weeds.
Yes.
Silence descended again, a moment of shared anger, punctuated by the dreary patter of drizzle. Retta fished out another cigarette, putting it to her lips with an unsteady hand.
The pictures were awful, she said, staring out into the yard. That's how I found out she was dead. I was standing in line at the IGA, and there she was, splashed across the front page, like one of those movie stars from the 1950s.
Christy Lynn silently cursed Daniel Connolly for his greed. I'm so sorry, she said softly, because she was. I'd hoped you hadn't seen them.
We get the papers here just like everyone else. I saw your pictures a few times, too. It must have been terrible being in the middle of all that.
It was. I had to move. I live in Virginia now. Retta lit her cigarette, then blew out a long plume of smoke.
I'm sorry your life got turned inside out because of Honey. I told her nothing good would come of it. I told her the first time she brought your husband around.
Christy Lynn felt the words like a physical blow. It never occurred to her that Stephen would have come to Riddlesville. You've met my husband? Retta blinked at her through a lingering cloud of smoke.
Of course I met him.
Here? Retta's weathered face puckered with a sour smile.
We weren't what he was used to, but he came around when he could.
I'm sorry, I just thought...
I know what you thought. I thought it too at first. All that money and those fancy clothes. Never a hair out of place. I couldn't think what a man like that would want with Honey. But then... people aren't always what they seem.
Christy Lynn allowed the remark to sink in, trying to decide if it was aimed at Stephen or Honey. She was about to say that she'd learned that lesson the hard way, when a shadow darkened Retta's face. She had gone still, her head inclined toward the door, as if she'd caught some faint sound. And then Christy Lynn heard it too, a high-pitched keening that seemed to be drawing closer by the second. There was a sudden look of alarm as Retta tossed her cigarette over the rail and struggled to her feet. Before she could reach the door, it opened, and a small face appeared.
Nani?
She was a tiny thing, pale hair pasted stickily to her head, eyes luminous with panic. Retta reached for her, scooping her up into her arms with a harsh rattle of breath.
Hush now,
she crooned, against the child's wet cheek.
I'm right here. Nani's right here.
The girl quieted almost immediately, though her breath still came in muffled shudders, her face burrowed in the crook of Retta's shoulder. Christy Lynn's heart squeezed as she watched the scene. She recognized the aftermath of a nightmare when she saw it, and judging by Retta's practiced attempts to soothe her, it probably wasn't the first episode. She was curled in Retta's lap now, pulling furiously at the thumb in her mouth. Retta patted her back gently, crooning against her cheek.
That's my big girl. We have company.
The child turned to look at Christy Lynn, her mouth suddenly still around her thumb, as if noticing her for the first time. She was lovely, a pale fairy of a girl, with hair like corn silk and enormous violet eyes.
Her mother's eyes.
Something cold and slippery roiled just south of Christy Lynn's ribs as she inventoried the child's features. Heart-shaped face, skin like a china doll's, and a prominent dimple in her tiny chin.
Stephen's chin.
Retta's eyes locked with Christy Lynn's.
This is Iris.
The porch seemed to shift, the soft thrum of rain receding as she stared at Stephen's little girl, the one she had vowed to never have, the one Honey had given him instead. 25.
We'd better go inside, Retta said,
struggling to get out of her chair with Iris clinging to her.
No sense airing the family laundry on the front porch.
Christy Lynn looked up and down the deserted road, wondering who on earth might overhear them, but it wasn't worth the argument. She stood, worrying briefly that her legs might buckle as she turned to follow Retta inside. The living room was small and cluttered, the air thick with stale cooking oil and decades of old smoke. She eyed the sagging curtains, the ancient television stacked with dog-eared copies of TV Guide, the cheap bric-a-brac covering every available surface. It was like a second-hand shop where no one ever bought anything. Retta jerked her chin toward the old plaid couch. Her lips had gone a funny shade of blue, and she was huffing like an old tractor.
Have a seat. I need to get her quieted down, and then I'll be back. Meantime, drink your lemonade. You don't look so good.
Christy Lynn did as she was told, easing numbly onto the edge of the couch. In the kitchen, Retta kept up a soothing stream of chatter as she bathed Iris's face and neck with a cool cloth. When she finished, she stripped off her damp t-shirt and replaced it with a clean one from the wicker basket on the counter, then set the child down in front of the television with a small dish of fish-shaped crackers. By the time Retta settled into the lumpy green recliner, she was an alarming shade of gray.
I'm sorry about that.
Her head lolled back against the chair.
I didn't mean for you to find out like this. In fact, I didn't mean for you to find out at all.
Why?
No need to kick you while you're down. You've been through enough.
I came because I wanted to know the truth.
And now?
I still want to know.
She sighed, clearly exhausted.
And I suppose you'd better ask your questions.
She's Stephen's, Christy Lynn said, fighting to keep her voice even.
She didn't need confirmation. She just needed a moment to sit with the truth of it. Of all the uncomfortable things she had expected to learn, the possibility of a child had never crossed her mind. Retta was nodding gravely, her weathered face full of sympathy.
She's a good girl, poor thing, but she's having a hard time. We both are. There are some things you just can't prepare yourself for. But then, I suppose you know about that.
Christy Lynn was barely listening, her attention fixed on the flesh and blood proof of her husband's infidelity. It was jarring to see the features of both Honey and Stephen mingled in one tiny little face, perhaps because after a few minutes, it became impossible to say which features were her mother's and which were her father's. Finally, she managed to drag her eyes away. The sooner she had her answers, the sooner she could leave.
Stephen and Honey, do you know how they met?
Retta groaned, as if the memory was painful.
A book signing over in Wheeler. She saw in the paper that your husband was going to be there, and that was that. Shameful, that girl. I think she thought he'd give her the part right there on the spot. He didn't, of course. That's not how it works. But something must have happened. Next thing I know, she was flying with him to California to meet some director or other. She ended up as an extra, I think they call it. No lines. But she was convinced that sooner or later she was going to be a big star. Maybe that's what he told her. Or maybe it's just what she wanted to believe.
Christy Lynn closed her eyes, trying to dispel the images suddenly filling her head. She knew Stephen had fans. He had a ridiculous following on social media, and his signing events were usually standing room only. She just never thought of those people as potential threats, and certainly not threats to her marriage. Though now that she did think of it, it wasn't that surprising. When it came to turning on the charm, no one was better than Stephen.
Was your granddaughter in love with my husband?
Retta looked mildly startled.
She was 25 years old. What on earth did she know about love?
She sighed, closing her eyes again briefly.
Though I suppose she thought she was. She certainly wouldn't listen to anything I tried to tell her. I warned her what would come of messing with a married man. Talked till I was blue in the face. And then one day she came home and said she was pregnant. There wasn't much sense talking after that. The damage was done.
Yes, I suppose it was, Christy Lynn said, wishing she'd never asked. But she had asked, and now there was nothing to do but sit stonily as Retta unraveled the timeline of Honey and Stephen's affair.
Don't get me wrong. I love that little girl to pieces, but I'm a bit long in the tooth to be raising a child. I've already raised three, God help me, and only one of them mine. Teresa, that was Honey's mama, got herself pregnant by the first boy who offered her a ride in his truck, then ran off and left me to raise her daughter. Only saw her twice after that. The first time she'd gotten herself in a mess and needed money. The last time was to leave me with Ray, Honey's brother. And now there's Iris.
How old is she?
3 in March. The 17th.
Christy Lynn worked out the math as her eyes slid to the little girl in front of the TV. She had been conceived in July. Of course, Stephen had been in L.A. that summer, consulting on the screenplay for An Uncommon Assassin and rubbing elbows with director Aaron Rothman. And Honey, apparently.
Are you all right? Retta asked. You look a bit rattled. Not that I blame you. This must all come as a terrible shock, as if you haven't had enough of those already. Can I get you something stronger than lemonade? Made right over the county line. My son would throw 7 fits if he knew I kept a jar in the house. But every once in a while, you need a little kick to set you right. I'd be happy to pour you a drop.
Christy Lynn shook her head. It would take more than a drop of West Virginia moonshine to set her right. No, she managed finally. No, thank you. I'm sorry. I have to go.
And just like that, she was off the couch and moving toward the door, suddenly desperate to put as many miles as possible between herself and Riddlesville.
Retta got to her feet with a bit of effort.
I'm so sorry about all of this. You seem like a nice woman. Certainly not one who deserved to learn what you did today. I know it's too late, but for what it's worth, I'm sorry Honey caused so much pain. She wasn't a bad girl. Just selfish.
Christy Lynn fumbled for a response but could find none. With a curt nod, she stepped out onto the porch, nearly tripping over the geranium pots as she scrambled down the steps and back to the Rover. She started the engine and managed to make it all the way back to the main road before slamming the car into park and slumping over the wheel. She had come for the truth, and now she had it. 4 years. They'd been together 4 years, and there was a child. The reality was simply too much to grasp. The shaking hit her all at once. Confusion mixed with disbelief coursing through her like poison.
Stephen. A father. It was inconceivable. The idea utterly foreign to her concept of the man she had married, the one who hadn't batted an eye when she said she didn't want children. But there was no denying it. One look at Iris, with her dimpled chin and violet eyes, was all the proof she needed. Had she been planned? Or was the pregnancy an accident, the byproduct of one careless night when passion had eclipsed reason and caution had been thrown to the wind? The thought made her stomach knot, but it was better than revisiting the possibility, as inexcusable as it might be, that the thing that had ultimately driven Stephen into the arms of another woman was the one thing, the only thing, she had ever denied him. The thought brought a clammy wave of nausea, and for a moment, she thought she might actually be sick. Lowering the window, she sucked in a dizzying breath. She needed to get herself together. She couldn't just sit in the middle of the road and go to pieces, and at that moment, she was dangerously close to doing just that. She needed to get out of Riddlesville, now. She was reaching for the gear shift, thinking about calling Missy as she had promised to, when her cell phone went off. She dragged it from her purse and answered without looking, wondering if there really was such a thing as telepathy. Missy, I was just about to call you.
It's not Missy.
Wade?
I was worried about you.
Something about the simple words caused Christy Lynn to crumple. She let out a gut-wrenching sob, unable to check the sudden torrent of tears flowing down her cheeks.
Talk to me, Christy Lynn. What's happened? Are you hurt?
Was she hurt? It was such a ridiculous question she hardly knew how to answer. No, she finally managed, gulping down a fresh sob before it could fully form. Yes?
I don't know. Where are you?
I'm here. She paused to wipe her nose on the back of her hand. I saw her. Talked to her.
And what else?
He has a daughter, she blurted. Stephen and Honey had a daughter.
Jesus.
Iris. Her name is Iris. She closed her eyes, slumping forward to lean her head against the steering wheel. She's 3.
Christy Lynn, you can't be sure. It could be.
No, it couldn't. She's his. I'm sure of it.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say.
There's nothing to say.
So how did you leave it?
I didn't. I just got up and walked out. Retta, Mrs. Rawlings, said she'd answer any questions I had. But then there was Iris, and I couldn't sit there another minute. I just left.
Where are you now?
I'm in the car, about to head back.
Christy Lynn, you can't. You've been driving all day. You've got to be exhausted.
Her throat ached, and she could barely breathe. I can't stay here.
Please promise me you won't drive tonight. Find a motel and get some sleep. You can leave first thing in the morning.
When she said nothing, he prompted her.
Promise me.
Yes. Okay, I'll find a motel.
And some food, since I'm guessing you haven't eaten. I'll check on you in the morning.
You don't need to.
I'll check on you in the morning, he repeated firmly.
All right, then. Her thumb was poised to end the call when she hesitated. Wade?
I'm still here.
Thank you.
No sweat. Get some rest.
Christy Lynn's room at the Connor Fork Days Inn was clean and quiet. She dropped her bags on the bed, stripped out of her clothes, and headed for the shower, determined to scrub away the lingering traces of stale grease and cigarette smoke still clinging to her skin and hair. She had no idea how long she stood there, under the scalding stream, or how long it took to finally cry herself out, but eventually she emerged from the bathroom, pink-skinned and spent. She donned a t-shirt and leggings, then flipped on the television, hoping to numb out with an old movie. But it was no use. Like a video on an endless loop, the day's events kept replaying in her head,
and the facts couldn't be denied. Stephen and Honey had a little girl, and that little girl was now an orphan. She had assumed Ray Rawlings' motives for wanting to keep his sister's sins under wraps had to do with shielding the family from scandal. But maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was about protecting an innocent little girl. The moment Honey's name was made public, the reporters would swarm. It would be only a matter of time before they stumbled onto Iris, a child with a famous father and a mother who wasn't his wife. Had Stephen given a second thought to what might happen to his daughter in such a case? And suddenly it was there, the question she'd been trying not to ask herself. How had Stephen taken the news that he was going to be a father? Had he been angry? Horrified? Or was it possible the idea of a child had actually appealed to him? That in some dark and ambivalent corner of his alpha male psyche, part of him longed to leave a piece of himself to the world. Or maybe the questions she should be asking weren't about Stephen at all, but about herself. Was there some part of her, some broken or missing part, that had prevented her from seeing that Stephen needed more? Had she been so busy trying to outrun her own scars that she had missed the signs? Or had the affair been exactly what it looked like? A midlife crisis with a celebrity-struck, surgically-enhanced blonde, the child a mere afterthought. Was it only obligation that had bound them together? Or had it gone deeper? The only two people who could answer those questions were dead. But there was Retta. She had come to Riddlesville for answers, but there was still so much she didn't know. Things she'd never gotten around to asking. Was she really willing to go back to Sweetwater without knowing all of it? And if so, why had she bothered to come at all? The question continued to churn long after she had slipped between the thin hotel sheets and switched off the light. The water is icy, a million needles prickling at her skin, and murky, like tea or dirty dishwater. There is a light in the distance. No, a pair of lights. Dismal points in the watery gloom. Lying lifeless along the bottom is a hulk of cold, bent metal. A face looms behind a square of glass, blue-white and familiar. Pale hair, fanned out around her head like a halo. She floats there with eyes closed, a grisly mermaid. The sunken place at her temple strangely bloodless. And then suddenly, her eyes are not closed. They're wide and glassy. Vivid violet through all that water. And then the blue-tinged lips begin to move. It's a strange thing to be aware that you're dreaming. To know what's coming and not be able to wake yourself, or at least look away. A surreal and terrible déjà vu. Except tonight, the dream is different. There's a new face peering out at her through the glass, a tiny face with vivid violet eyes, a small, bright echo of the other. She does not speak at first. Her mouth is closed, silent. And then she begins to cry, a miserable wail through all that water.
Nani!
Her face is suddenly filled with terror, her hands splayed in panic against the glass. It's too much to see, too much to hear. And then, with lungs near bursting, she is swimming away from the tiny face, the terrible wail growing fainter as she claws her way madly toward the surface. Christy Lynn sat bolt upright in bed, drenched and gulping for air, the echo of Iris's pale face still fresh in her mind. Please, God, not the child, too. Her heart battered her ribs as she dragged her eyes to the clock on the nightstand, the numbers glowing blue in the unfamiliar dark. 11:15. Kicking off the sheets, she padded to the bathroom, sponged her face and neck with cold water, then stripped off her sweat-drenched clothes and climbed back into bed. She was about to reach for the TV remote when she spied her phone charging next to the bed. She pulled up Missy's number, then peered at the clock again. It was long past the boys' bedtime, which meant Missy was probably already passed out, exhausted after a day at the inn, followed by an evening of baths and homework. On impulse, She scrolled down to Wade's number. He'd put it in there, after all, in case she needed to talk. And she did. He picked up after a single ring.
Please tell me you're not driving.
Christy Lynn dragged the sheet up reflexively at the sound of his voice, covering her bare breasts.
No, I'm not driving.
There was a pause. He was waiting for her to say more, except she didn't really have any new information since the last time they'd spoken.
I ate, she said lamely.
Good. But why aren't you asleep?
I'm sorry. It's late. I shouldn't have called.
I didn't mean that. I just meant I was hoping you'd get some rest.
Not going to happen, I'm afraid.
Can't sleep.
Ghosts, she said quietly.
She showed up in the dream tonight, too.
The little girl?
Iris, she told him softly. Her name is Iris. And yes, I can't stop thinking about her. There's so much I don't know, things I never got the chance to ask.
At the risk of sounding heartless, why would you want to know anything else?
Christy Lynn raked a hand through her bangs. How did she make him understand when she didn't understand herself?
Honestly, I'm not sure I do. But I'm here now, so I was thinking...
Oh, God.
I was thinking about going back. If Retta will still talk to me after the way I walked out, I'm just not sure I can handle seeing Iris again.
Then maybe you shouldn't. Maybe it's time to just let this go and come home, like you said you were going to.
I don't think I can. Not until I know the rest of it.
The rest of what, Christy Lynn? They had an affair. What else is there?
What else is there? She echoed, aware that she sounded faintly hysterical. There's a child, one Stephen never told anyone about and never bothered to provide for. Never once did he bring up the idea of us having a baby. Not once in 8 years. But he had a daughter with Honey. Did the child mean anything to him, or was she just a mistake, an accident he wasn't willing to own?
Another sigh, softer this time. Why are you doing this, Christy Lynn? Torturing yourself like this? It's over.
Christy Lynn closed her eyes, knees hugged to her chest.
I know you don't understand. You couldn't, and you don't need to, but there are reasons I need to know what happened and why. Things I need to figure out. So for me, it isn't over.
Why do you care anyway?
Because it's what he did. What he always did. He swooped in, took what he wanted, and then made it someone else's fault. And now I see you falling right into it, taking the blame because he was a snake. You deserve better than that.
The remark took Christy Lynn by surprise.
How do you know?
There was a long pause, as if he were hunting for an answer.
I don't know, he said finally. I just do. Look, you're tired. Try to sleep if you can, and then come home. You've got something here, something that's yours. Maybe that's what you should focus on. Not the past, and not someone else's mistakes. The future.
All right.
Call me when you get on the road.
I will.
But even as she ended the call, she knew she wouldn't be heading home first thing in the morning. 26. If Retta was surprised to find Christy Lynn standing on her porch again the next morning, she hid it well. She was still in her house coat and slippers when she answered the door.
I suspected you'd be back.
Christy Lynn ran her tongue over her lips, her mouth suddenly dry.
About yesterday. I'm sorry about walking out like that. I was just...
The sound of cartoons mingled with the aroma of frying bacon drifted out onto the porch.
I've got breakfast going for Iris if you're hungry.
Christy Lynn shook her head. Food was the last thing on her mind.
No, thank you. I just have a few more questions.
Yes, I thought you might.
She pulled back the door and stepped aside.
Come on in, then, and let me get her fed.
Iris sat cross-legged in front of the television, clutching a bedraggled teddy bear to her chest. Her hair was still sleep-tangled, her eyes glued to the screen. Christy Lynn fought down a shudder as snatches of the previous night's dream came flooding back. That tiny face, frantic behind the glass. What in God's name was she doing here?
Coffee?
Retta offered, as Christy Lynn followed her into the tiny kitchen.
Yes, if it's ready.
Retta filled a thick brown mug and set it on the table, along with a spoon and a half gallon of milk.
Sugar's there if you take it.
Christy Lynn took a seat, pouring a splash of milk into her mug, as she watched Retta crack a single egg into a bowl and give it a quick scramble before pouring it into the pan. Her hands trembled as she worked, but she moved with the ease of a woman who had prepared her share of breakfasts. Moments later, she turned the egg out onto a plate, added two slices of bacon, and disappeared into the living room with Iris's breakfast. She was a bit winded when she returned, her lips parted and grayish.
I don't like for her to eat in front of the television, she said,
filling a mug for herself and joining Christy Lynn at the table.
But this way, we'll have the kitchen to ourselves.
Thank you.
Well, it's not the kind of talk a child should hear, is it?
No, I suppose not. Retta splashed some milk into her coffee, then dropped in a heaping spoonful of sugar.
So, she said, still stirring, here we are again.
Yes, here we are. A friend of mine thinks I'm crazy for coming here. He doesn't understand why I need to know all the gritty details.
No, a man wouldn't, but I do. You need to make sense of it.
Christy Lynn nodded, relieved to at last be understood. Yes. Retta's eyes slid away, watery blue and suddenly full of memory.
I was married once. A million years ago. Men haven't changed all that much since my time. Women either. We still try to make everything our fault.
I guess what I really need to know is, why?
Good luck figuring that out. Now you sound like Wade. Your friend?
Yes. He thinks I'm a glutton for punishment. And maybe I am. It's certainly a strange thing to be confronted with a child of your husband's mistress.
I didn't mean for you to find out about Iris. That was an accident. She's been through enough without having to figure out who you are. She doesn't understand where her mama's gone. Not that her mama was around all that much.
Where was she? Retta sighed, a hoarse, tired rasp.
Who knows? With him somewhere. I told you Honey had her heart set on being an actress. Where she came up with that idea, I'll never know. But that was her dream. She took a few acting classes in high school and at the community college. Even did a commercial for a furniture store here in town. She wasn't very good, but she was pretty. I guess she thought that was enough because off she went to find him.
Retta rose and shuffled to the counter, returning with a coffee pot to top off their mugs.
Groupies, they used to call them in my day. But that was for singers and movie stars. I didn't know writers had them, too.
For an instant, Christy Lynn was transported back to the day she bumped into Stephen in the hall at Lloyd and Griffin. If possible, he had been even better looking than the author photo on the back of his novels, and with his polished smile and easy patter, he had positively oozed charm. It wasn't hard to imagine a girl like Honey, ambitious, starry-eyed, and desperate for a ticket out of Riddlesville, succumbing to that combination, as she herself had. My husband had a way of collecting people, she said finally, like a magnet. I used to think it was unconscious. Now I realize he knew exactly what he was doing. Funny what you can see in the rearview mirror. Retta let out another sigh.
I thought she'd stop seeing him when she realized he didn't actually have much say about who got to be in the movies, but she didn't. Maybe it was the money. He bought her nice things, Took her nice places. It turned her head. I guess it would any girl's. At least any girl from Riddlesville. She got all that with Stephen, along with a nice car and a fancy apartment somewhere. Pretty soon, she didn't even look like honey, with those store-bought boobs and all the designer clothes. She'd disappear for a while, then come back, just long enough to rub her new life in everyone's face, especially the old crowd down at the IGA, where she used to cashier. She'd spent a little time with Iris, but mostly it was about showing off, and then off she'd go again. Christy Lynn was still digesting the fact that Stephen had set his mistress up in an apartment when she remembered the auto drafts she had discovered on his bank statements. Star Properties LTD. Not a publicity firm then, a property management company. And what about the $4,000 transfers each month? Was my husband paying child support? She had put the question a bit bluntly, and for a moment, Retta seemed genuinely surprised. I don't know if you'd call it that. At least I never did. It was more like an allowance. He would put money in Honey's account every month. Quite a lot of money. It made me ashamed that she took it. There are names for women who take money from men. But then Iris came along, and I couldn't afford to be all high and mighty. Children need things. Lots of things. And a government check only goes so far. Christy Lynn felt a sharp stab of remorse. She'd never stopped to consider that Stephen's death might spell disaster for Iris and her great-grandmother. Are you all right? Money-wise, I mean. Retta stepped away, sliding the pot back onto the burner. We'll manage, she said firmly. We'll have to. You mentioned a grandson. Ray, she said, suddenly looking very tired. He never thought much of Honey. Very pious, my Ray. Reverend of the Living Water Tabernacle. His wife Ellen plays the organ on Sundays. And oh, wasn't she green with envy when Honey started popping up in church with all her fancy clothes. And Honey loved every minute. I know that sounds petty. And it is. I'm not making excuses for the girl. What she did was wrong. But I'm guessing you have no idea what it's like to grow up in a town like this, to see how the rest of the world lives, and know there's no chance you'll ever have that kind of life. Or much of any life, really. Unless you count raising a passel of kids in a double-wide. But Honey knew it. So did her mother. Which is why I suppose they both got out the first chance they got.
For one terrible instant, Christy Lynn flashed back to the night she had been ushered into a hospital room to find her mother lying there with her face sewn up, promising that when she got out of jail, things would go back to the way they were. In her whole life, she'd never been more afraid than the night her mother made that promise. Yes, she did have an idea what it was like. Much more than an idea. In that, at least, she and Honey had had something in common. Retta was back in her chair now, stirring sugar into her freshened mug, her eyes clouded and far away. Christy Lynn watched her for what felt like a long time, trying to figure out the best way to frame her next question. Did they ever talk about getting married? She said finally, because there was no best way.
You mean, was Stephen planning to ask you for a divorce?
Christy Lynn looked down at her hands, wrapped a little too tightly around her mug. Yes.
Not that I ever heard. And I'm not sure Honey really cared about a ring. I think she liked having all the benefits of being married to a rich man without any of the responsibility. That's why Iris coming along knocked her for such a loop.
Christy Lynn gnawed at her lip, weighing another awkward question. You don't think she got pregnant so Stephen would marry her? Retta's eyes widened.
You mean to trap him? Good grief, no. It was Honey who ended up getting trapped with that baby. Stupid girl.
She talked about, you know, not having it. It was Stephen who talked her out of that.
Christy Lynn let the words sink in. The question reared its head again. Was it possible Stephen hadn't been as okay with her choice to remain childless as he had pretended? It was a haunting question, one she'd never have an answer to.
How often did he see Iris?
Not very often near the end. But you know what his schedule was like, always jetting off somewhere. And he was living two lives, wasn't he? It couldn't have been easy, keeping it a secret from the whole world. And you.
Retta set down her mug and looked Christy Lynn in the eye.
You never suspected, even a little.
Not even a little, she answered flatly, pretending the old woman's gaze didn't unsettle her.
Did he seem fond of Iris?
Retta lifted her shoulders, then dropped them with a sigh.
It's hard to say. He treated her more like a doll than a daughter, something pretty he could pet and hold on his lap. He used to call her his best girl. I don't think Honey liked that too well. She didn't like sharing him, even with Iris. It's terrible to say. But I think she would have eventually stopped coming to see Iris altogether. And in time, things would have gone south with Stephen. Honey always did have a short attention span.
4 years isn't that short, Christy Lynn pointed out dryly.
I suspect Iris was the reason for that. Your husband could have lived without Honey, and she could have lived without him. But children have a way of changing things. They turn your life inside out. Your heart, too. Honey was just too young and selfish to know it. My fault, I guess, since I brought her up.
Christy Lynn considered Retta's words as she pushed away her mug. She'd been nothing but forthcoming, neither defensive nor secretive, though not quite apologetic either.
You're very blunt about all this.
Retta seemed surprised by the observation. What else can I be? This was only ever going to end badly. But when you've been around as long as I have, you realize people have to make their own mistakes, sometimes big ones, before they figure out they're getting it wrong. Trouble is, they usually figure it out too late, and someone else is left holding the bag. All Honey cared about was having fun. She knew I'd take care of Iris, and I will, for as long as I can.
On cue, Iris toddled into the kitchen clutching her teddy bear.
Juice?
All right, I'll get you some juice.
Retta clutched the edge of the table as she shoved herself out of her chair, her slippers scuffing the worn vinyl as she went to the refrigerator. Her hand trembled as she filled a plastic sippy cup, then snapped on the lid.
There you go, sweetie.
But Iris had lost interest in juice. She was too busy staring at the stranger in her kitchen, her wide violet eyes full of questions. Retta took the forgotten sippy cup from Iris's hand and set it on the table, then took hold of her shoulders.
This is Christy Lynn, honey. She's a friend, was a friend, of your daddy's.
Iris cocked her head to one side, a tiny V of confusion forming between her pale brows. Retta caught Christy Lynn's eye as she grabbed a rumpled pack of cigarettes from the counter.
Come on, then, she said, taking Iris by the hand and nodding toward the door. Let's get you outside in the sunshine for a bit.
Christy Lynn recognized Retta's words for what they were. Code for, Nani needs a cigarette. She followed reluctantly as Retta herded the child onto the porch and then down the front steps, unearthing a plastic bucket and shovel from somewhere and putting them in Iris's hands.
We'll be right up here,
she promised, lumbering back up the porch steps.
Right here where you can see us.
Is Mama coming?
Retta pressed a hand to her chest, her eyes closing briefly.
No, baby. Mama isn't coming. She had to go away, remember?
Iris's chin began to quiver.
her little face threatening to crumple.
Want Mama?
I know you do, little one. So do I. But she's watching us.
Retta squinted up at the sky, pointing to a tuft of white cloud.
From up in heaven, remember? And she loves to watch you play. Can you do that for Mama? Can you play?
Iris nodded. But her face was a dejected blank as she turned away with her plastic shovel. Retta reached into her housecoat pocket, cellophane crinkling as she fished out her cigarettes. She fumbled one out of the pack, then eased into the chair beside Christy Lynn's.
It's hard looking at her, isn't it?
She asked, when she lit her cigarette and taken the first pull.
Very.
It's hard for me, too.
Her voice crackled. She took another long drag, blowing out the smoke on a long sigh.
She barely talks anymore. Just a word here and there when she wants something. Poor thing. She's so confused. She started having nightmares since honey. Since the accident.
Christy Lynn nodded but said nothing.
I'm tired, Mrs. Ludlow. And I'm not equipped. I didn't expect to be raising another child at my age. And my doctors aren't exactly full of good news these days. I don't know how much longer.
Christy Lynn cut her off before she could finish. Surely Ray and his wife,
they've already said no. And I suppose I can't blame them. They can barely keep body and soul together as it is, and there's another mouth coming in the fall. I don't know how Ellen will manage. She can't keep up with the four she has, let alone five. There just isn't room for Iris.
What will happen if...
When?
Retta corrected, squinting at Christy Lynn through a freshly exhaled haze of smoke.
There's no if. Only when.
And Iris?
Social services, I suppose. Unless Ray backs down, and I don't see that happening.
Christy Lynn felt her chest squeeze, as if her ribcage was suddenly filled with stones.
You mean foster care?
Retta's breath shuddered as she looked away.
I know it's a hard thing, but there's nothing else. No other way.
Christy Lynn remained quiet, partly because she didn't trust her own voice. She was 16 when she entered the foster care system. She couldn't imagine what it would be like for a child Iris's age, especially when that child was already showing signs of coping issues. You can't mean Ray would actually let his own niece go to foster care. If it comes down to it, if something happens, they'd take her, wouldn't they? Rather than let her end up with strangers.
Retta's eyes were moist now, her face full of misery.
He told me I'd better take care of myself, because there was no way he was having Honey's Brad in his house. As if it was Iris's fault her parents weren't married.
Christy Lynn was stunned. What about Christian charity? About suffer the little children? Isn't that what he's supposed to believe?
Retta shook her grizzled head, as if bewildered. I gave up trying to figure out what that boy believes a long time ago. But you can ask him yourself if you want. That's him coming up the road. And it looks like he's brought the whole brood. I forgot they were coming by to pick up some muffins I made for the church bake sale.
Christy Lynn looked up in time to see a faded maroon van coming down the road in a cloud of dun-colored dust. I'll go, she said, instantly on her feet. She didn't want Retta to have to explain her presence. Oh, my purse and keys are inside, on the kitchen table. Retta pushed to her feet with startling swiftness.
I'll bring them out.
To her dismay, Christy Lynn found herself alone on the porch, watching as the van pulled up and the doors swung open. The children tumbled out first, raw-boned and pale, whooping like wild things as they scrambled in all directions. Ray appeared next, coming round to open the passenger side door for his wife. She was matchstick thin, but for her swollen middle, carrying a foil-covered casserole dish as she waddled toward the house a few paces behind her husband. Christy Lynn averted her gaze, wishing Retta would reappear so she could leave before things got any more awkward than they already were. In light of Retta's revelations, she didn't trust herself to hold her tongue. Iris had been playing with her shovel in the dirt. She looked up, shrinking visibly as her uncle moved past without so much as a glance in her direction. The cousins came next, swarming across the yard. Iris ducked as the oldest, a boy with stained jeans and greasy blonde hair, stepped over her as if she were a puppy. Ray stared up at Christy Lynn from the bottom step of the porch, a slight man with sharp shoulders and long, stringy limbs. Beside him, Ellen Rawlings ran her gaze over Christy Lynn in one long, dismissive pass.
"Afternoon," Ray said coolly. "You here to see Retta?"
Before Christy Lynn could respond, Retta reappeared, her purse in one hand and a plate of cling film-covered muffins in the other. She handed the purse over, her eyes full of apology.
"This is Mrs. Ludlow, Ray. We've just been chatting about your sister and your niece."
Ray snorted, a blend of disgust and dismissal. He closed one eye, as if drawing a bead on Christy Lynn.
"That's so. You come all the way from Maine to talk about my sister."
"I live in Virginia now, and I'm here."
"I know why you're here," he shot back. "And I'll tell you the same thing I told the police when they came sniffing around. I see my family's name in the papers. I'll sue everyone from here to Kingdom Come. We're good, decent people, Mrs. Ludlow, just trying to raise our kids and live our lives. Your beef was with my sister, and since she's dead, I'd say you're all done here."
Christy Lynn lifted her chin, meeting his gaze squarely. She would probably have disliked Ray Rawlings on sight, but knowing he was capable of turning his back on a child cemented her revulsion. "You mentioned raising your kids. Does that include Iris?"
"She's not my kid."
"She's your flesh and blood, a part of your family."
"She's an abomination, is what she is. Born in sin, and no part of my family."
Christy Lynn stared back at him, dumbfounded. "So that's it? You let your own niece end up in foster care because of something her parents did?" She knew she was overstepping her bounds, but couldn't seem to help herself. It was impossible to look at Iris and not see herself. She might have been 16 when she entered the foster care system instead of 3, but that was just math.
"The wages of sin, Mrs. Ludlow, right there in the good book. The Lord shall visit the iniquities of the father on the children."
"Praise his name," Ellen murmured coldly as she pushed past Christy Lynn and disappeared inside the house with her casserole dish. Retta glared at her grandson.
"For God's sake, Ray, a child's right there, and Mrs. Ludlow is company."
Ray shrugged.
"Not my company."
As if sensing she'd become the topic of conversation, Iris dropped her shovel and raised her eyes to Christy Lynn. Christy Lynn looked away quickly, tormented by the silent plea in the child's violet gaze. "I need to get back," she told Retta. "Thank you for the coffee and everything. I came for answers, and now I have them, or as close as I'll ever get. That couldn't have been easy for you." Retta nodded, her eyes suddenly awash with tears.
"It's only what you deserved, though I'm not sure I've done you any favors with the truth."
Christy Lynn wasn't sure either, but reached for Retta's hand just the same, giving it a squeeze before she turned to descend the steps. Ray made no move to get out of her way, forcing her to sidle past. She was heading for the driveway when she heard footsteps behind her. Before she knew what was happening, Iris had launched herself full force, arms locked tight around her knees, clinging like a limpet. Retta scurried down the steps after her.
"I'm sorry," she said uncomfortably. "She doesn't like it when people leave. She never knows who's coming back and who's not."
Christy Lynn nodded, an ache suddenly clawing at her throat. What kind of future would this child ever have?
with a caregiver in decline and an uncle who wanted nothing to do with her. One day, Retta would fall ill,